We're just getting started here with Ask the Mayor. It's our monthly meeting with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. We do this every week in Columbus, Terre Haute, and Nashville. And this is the third week of March. Thank you, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton, for being with us.
Great to be with you again, Joe. We're close to spring. It's getting there, but nice to be with you again.
Yeah. A little reminder of winter still this week. I just wanted to start because we didn't get a chance to talk about the State of the City address. That was a couple weeks ago. The two, I guess, big questions that I have, and you talked a lot, but the two things that I think resonate most with people was when you mentioned annexation and more revenue. So do you have any more specifics on that moving forward? Can we start with the annexation plan?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks. You know, that's an annual event we do. It was different this year, of course. It was virtual. It reminded us last year in February was, I mentioned in the State of the City that in the February speech I gave last year, I didn't mention the word COVID or pandemic. It really was, we were aware of something in the state of Washington, and there was a little going on, but not much, and sure has changed this year. And the theme was to remember, to recover, and to renew. And yes, Joe, as you mentioned, among other things, I did talk about annexation and where that is. As folks probably know, we won a lawsuit in the Indiana Supreme Court late last year that ruled a state law, a state statute that the legislature passed as unconstitutional that they did to stop our annexation. So we're really talking with folks now inside government, outside county, city, about the next steps. No decision's been made about that. But, you know, I've made no secret of the fact that for a number of years, I've believed it's important for the city of Bloomington to continue to grow our boundaries as we have for 185 years. And then we've kind of stopped the last 17 years. Those boundaries haven't changed while the growth has continued. And we have, as Bloomington has for its whole history, growing the boundaries to accommodate the densifying urban city. And I think we need to keep looking at that. The legislature makes it difficult sometimes, but it's the right thing to do for our community and frankly for our whole region, I think, to move forward that way.
So what happens in 2021 with that?
Yeah, I think, ultimately this is up to city council. They have the votes, they take the actions on this, and I'm talking with them now. I would expect that in 2021, we'll try to move forward and make some decisions, but we haven't made any decisions yet. And again, it'll be up to, you know, President City Council Jim Sims and his colleagues to work with the administration to decide if and when to schedule it.
Okay. Then there was the local income tax increase. It did not pass last year. Is this something you're looking for reboot this year?
Yeah, you know, in the State of the City, I talked about how important coming out of this pandemic and the terrible recession that's hit so many of us, how important it is to come out of that strong, to recover and renew, to pivot out of the worst year of 2020 into a much better year of 2021, we hope, and really the decade of the 20s. And I've made no secret that I believe revenue is important for that. We are the lowest tax rate, income tax rate of all seven contiguous counties and among the lower tier in the whole state. But there has been a change. So I did talk about that in the State of the City. But I will say, Joe, that the American Rescue Plan, the act, which was the big act passed by Congress and signed by President Biden just a week ago, is a big deal. There is very significant local revenue. We expect, we don't know all the details, but it may well be that national stimulus and rescue package will mean we don't need to do immediate local revenue generating because of that. So we're studying that. We have to see the details, but I'm talking to colleagues around the state and with our county. But I do believe we need revenue to recover forward correctly and well and help our community get back on its feet. But it may be that revenue can come from the federal government in the short order as we look at the longer term questions.
Interesting. Okay. We'll keep on that and ask you about that again next month. I know there's been a lot to you talking about in your State of the City address about the homelessness issue in town and how many affordable housing beds that this administration has created. But what's your plan, just getting on the same page with all these organizations that provide services to the people experiencing homelessness? What's your plan for the lowest income, no income housing?
Yeah, look, you know, City of Bloomington, we've had people experiencing homelessness for years, of course. And I mean, I used to be the chair of the board of the Shalom Center, it was as it was called then, have been very involved in the work, as many in this community have been. This pandemic and this recession have definitely been a body blow to all of us, and particularly there are people who've really taken, been really seriously affected. We have more people experiencing homelessness now than any time I'm aware of. We have about 200 to 250 people a night sleeping in emergency shelters. That's much bigger than it was a year ago or 5 years ago. So those individuals who are in and of our community are really on a lot of our minds, both in government, city, township, county, as well as nonprofits, providers, partners, and the community as a whole. So the immediate work has been through the COVID pandemic and through the winter and on into the spring here to help make sure everybody can stay safe, that they have emergency housing. I believe, and this community endorses the housing first model, which says if you're without housing, the first thing that needs to happen is housing, not trying to fix everything else all at once, but get people into housing. That doesn't mean emergency shelter. It means reliable long-term housing. So that effort is underway. I've asked, and we have a wonderful group now led by Tina Peterson of the Community Foundation and Efrat Pfefferman of the United Way that has brought a regional effort to this housing insecurity question. So we have short-term triage and emergency things we need to do. Longer term, it's really how do we help more people get into housing? You mentioned, you know, we've created 1,400 bedrooms of affordable units over the last 5 years. That's a big step, but it's not enough. That's out of about 6,500 market rate total to 6,500 total bedrooms. So we're chipping away at it, but there's more work that needs to be done. The funding, we need more funding for this. Affordable housing isn't free, and we'll continue to work on that. But the short term is keep everybody safe, make sure people have food, lodging, healthcare, and our communities really stepped up to help make that possible.
And just a quick follow-up, just getting all those organizations on the same page too, is there progress on that?
Well, it's complicated now. You know, there's a really strong housing partnership network, and there's been actually revisions to a plan focused on homelessness that's a few years old, and it's getting revived and reconsidered and looked at. And the gist of that plan is summarized in three very simple concepts, which is we want to make homelessness rare, we want to make it brief, and we want to make it non-repeating. That is, if you get into homelessness, you're only there briefly. There's not too many people experiencing that, and it doesn't happen to you again. You know, it's so disruptive to families. We think about kids who go through this. And so the partners are working together. There's always some, there may be different viewpoints and different tacks on this, but I'm really pleased overall. I think people are pulling together and trying to solve this problem.
Well, we have a lot of questions being emailed in this week. And if anyone is listening or watching, news@indianapublicmedia.org, you can submit your question there. If we don't get to it today, we'll make sure to get to it next month or for any of our mayors that we speak with. Let's just start with Rhett. Heard that Indiana vets greater than 18 years of age would be eligible for COVID-19 vaccine, for the vaccine this week, but can't find the info. Do you by chance know anything about veterans?
The thing I'd say is just call 211 if you can't find info. There's a lot of information online, and the state coronavirus website is a good place to start. But if you feel frustrated or can't find that information, just call 211 and people can help steer you and answer the questions that you have about that.
Yeah. Constance wrote in, how many have had the disease and are therefore now immune? What percentage of the population is that? And I'm assume that this person is getting toward this herd immunity that we've been hearing about.
Yeah, and I'm always cautious to say I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm not a health expert. I hang around with some of them, so I pick things up. But ultimately, I think we estimate something around 10% of our folks overall have gotten the disease, tested positive for the disease. But from what I understand, there's probably three times that many that have actually had the disease. That is, only 2/3 of those who have gotten sick just never got positive tests. So something in the order of 1/3 of our state, our community, our country has probably had the disease, give or take. And that means there are some immunities, but we still want to have vaccines to everybody. I have antibodies. I tested negative twice, but then I had a positive antibody test last summer. So it means I had the disease. I'm still getting a vaccine actually tomorrow and this week, and look forward to that. So the main point is really encouraging folks who, when it's your turn, whether you're a veteran or whether you're now 45 and over or whatever it is, please get a vaccine. That's what's going to get us through this pandemic.
I'm going to combine these two questions together. Carolyn wants to know where to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine at. And then Amy writes, and she appreciates the updates, but has ethical concerns about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, would not accept that. So is there a way that people can, I know a lot of medical people we talk to say, just get the vaccine. But if someone has a question about getting an individual one, can they do that?
Well, you're right. The basic point is when it's your turn to get vaccinated, go get vaccinated regardless of which vaccine it is. There is not much Johnson & Johnson available now. It's pretty unusual to have that. It's being used in some of these kind of pop-up, even these big pop-up clinics where people are traveling long distances. I know they did that at the Speedway, for example. So it's a one-shot regimen. Most of the vaccine that's being delivered in our community and in the state are the two other vaccines, the Pfizer and the Moderna. And those, so if you set an appointment for almost any place, in any place in Monroe County, you're very likely to get the Pfizer and Moderna. You can ask again when you check that out. But the basic point I think I want to just keep saying is, all three vaccines are safe. They're all effective. They have some differences among them. If there's a particular difference for a medical reason or an ethical reason that you have, you can explore that. I would encourage, though, most of us, just get the vaccine that's available at the soonest appointment that you qualify for.
Yeah, and I think when you sign up too, it says which stations, vaccine centers have what vaccine too. So that's something that you can look into. This one is, Mayor Hamilton, if I have an appointment for a second shot at the convention center on Saturday, April 3rd, should I still go to the convention center? I think this is because they've been talking about moving that to Assembly Hall.
Right. There is a transition happening from the convention center. This is the program run by the County Health Department, and it's being picked up by Indiana University as a delivery site. Basically, my understanding is any second shot, you can still go to the convention center where you originally got it, even when the other one stood up. But if you want to be sure, again, I'd call 211 as an answer just to lock that in. But I do believe the health department is planning to provide all the second shots from the same place you got your first shot. If that's different, we'll try to clarify that in a press conference in the upcoming Fridays, and we can try to make clear of that. But I believe that's the case.
Sherry emails in, can you please tell me when the rental assistance opens up? What do I need to do to sign up?
Well, rental assistance is available to people right now. If what you're talking about is the program locally here that can help through the township trustees, that's a level of government that a lot of people don't really pay attention to or aren't aware of, but every county in the state and every resident in every county has a township trustee that serves, and the county has helped provide funding through the township trustees to help people if they have emergency needs related to rental costs or other issues. So contact your township trustee. Now there may be federal or state programs that I'm not as aware of the details of that. I'm happy to try to figure that out if you want to call my office, if what you're talking about are state or federal programs.
All right, Jamie writes in, allowing family members to attend basketball games indoors, but not allowing family members to attend graduation in a stadium makes no sense.
Is that a question or is that a statement?
I think it's more of a statement.
Okay. Well, look, I mean, it's complicated. This stuff, everybody's trying to do the best we can to protect public health on the one hand, job one, and on the other hand, to allow life to proceed as we can. You know, their hospitals have to make decisions on who can visit in a room where somebody is sick or even dying. Churches are making decisions, schools are making decisions, everybody's restaurants, bars, universities, everybody's doing the best they can to balance those, protecting public health first, but also allowing things to happen that we can. There are differences that are sometimes not obvious, you know, in venues, in protocols. For example, you know, the basketball games that are being held this week in the NCAA tournament have an extraordinary safety protocols underneath them, behind them, that are allowing people to attend. Schools, we've learned a lot over the last year. So I know it can be frustrating. It's frustrating for everybody, but just try to be patient and understand nobody is the enemy here. Nobody's doing anything to harm anybody. Everybody's just doing their very best to protect everybody's health while also letting things happen when we can. And it'll get better. It is getting better. It's mostly going to get better as we get vaccinated.
Well, then Suzanne writes, and why no fans in Bloomington? So I don't know. I can't remember. Are there no fans at Assembly Hall?
Well, let me give credit to this is Indiana University taking what I believe is a very prudent and careful approach. They are allowing 500 people into Simon Scott Assembly Hall during the game, but that includes coaches, trainers, immediate family members of the teams. So 500 isn't very many. The tickets that were left are being dedicated to first responders and direct healthcare workers, which is great. So they're going to get to go see some of the game. IU took that stance because of their awareness of the risks. Other communities, Indianapolis, West Lafayette, have taken perhaps a different approach. But this county has been very careful, and it's one of the reasons we've done, I think, relatively well in protecting against the surge. And I want to thank IU for that. It's not an easy decision. The NCAA didn't love it, all of it, but they've worked together. And again, this is people of goodwill making really hard calls, making judgments. And again, I'll encourage patience and understanding that this is complicated, and we're all doing the best we can to protect public health.
Paul writes in, kind of a two-part question. Are there plans to upgrade the entire water service pipes throughout the city? And then a second question would be, what is the dollar amount total and dispersed of the funds collected from developers for affordable housing?
Okay, sure. You know, the water system, I don't want to get all geeky and everything. There's really kind of three water systems. There's the drinking water system that provides water to all of us that comes out of our tap that we use. There's the wastewater system that's basically the sewer, the when we flush our toilets, when the drains out of our showers and sinks and all that. And then third, there's a stormwater system, and that's the system that collects rainwater, essentially, that flows and all. And all three systems are under the City of Bloomington Utilities Management. All three systems are definitely upgraded regularly. Now, you will hear about the drinking water system, those water mains, that's the high pressure water system that delivers it to our taps. When I came into office, we were on a schedule to replace each pipe every 300 years or so. That's not enough. They break and they fail faster than that. So we are improving that system. It takes money to get a better replacement system and rhythm going to get it down below 200 years. And then ultimately, it really needs to be below 100 years to replace those pipes. The other two systems are separate systems, but they're all being upgraded. You may notice in Bloomington downtown what we call the Hidden River Project. What used to be known as the Jordan River, now the Campus River in Clear Creek, flows right under downtown Bloomington, and there's a $13 million project that's working to upgrade those 100-year-old pipes. The second question was about affordable housing. We have an affordable housing fund that's gotten between $3 and $4 million, I think, I don't know the exact number offhand, that has been coming into that fund, and we have more coming that we then push back out to help support those 1,400 new bedrooms of affordable housing. And that's been a program over the last 5 years that's been really important and helpful.
We just have 4 minutes left. I'll just try to sneak this in because it's so important to so many people. But the Plan Commission now has started a month-long public hearings on the UDO. So the plan is for them to have the hearings and what make a recommendation to City Council. Is that right?
Yeah, so this is the zoning update for the city. The Unified Development Ordinance is a long name for zoning. A new map and new zoning. It came out of the comprehensive plan process, which is a regular review the city does. The zoning involves both the map of where the zones apply in every tract of the city, and also the rules that govern. And those are getting evolving, changing. The Plan Commission, which is a citizen resident-led group of folks, do the first step, and they're spending most of this month reviewing that. They then make a recommendation to City Council, which ultimately votes on both the map and any new rules. So, for example, the new rules include a new district designated for high-density student development, basically focused on kind of undergraduate development. Where is a good place for intense development to happen in the city? That's a new zone. There'll be a map and new rules for that. There's also consideration about allowing duplexes. Where should they be allowed new ones to be built in the city? We have 700 or so now, but where should new ones be allowed? There's accessory dwelling units. There's setbacks, and all those requirements are being reviewed. They're very technical, hundreds of pages. But for those interested, Plan Commission this month, basically City Council next month.
And last question, any update on closing Kirkwood Avenue for dining this spring?
Working discussions going on right now about that. We as a city basically are trying to partner closely with the vendors, the restaurants and proprietors along Kirkwood or other places in the city to look at what would make sense. A parklet, would you like to close a couple parking spaces and create seating, close Kirkwood on the weekends like we did? I expect we'll see that this spring. We're working on that with folks as the weather improves. It all depends on, we don't want to close a street unless the restaurants want to use it. So we're working with them to make sure it meets their needs. But I think the community really enjoyed it. It's again, this balance, it's safer to eat outside. So if we can do that while helping the restaurants and proprietors serve their customers, I expect we'll see that pretty soon this spring.
All right. I know I'm out of time. Do you have any announcements or anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I do want to, we got a new deputy mayor coming, Mick Renison, served the city for 40 years. He's retiring next month. He's done an extraordinary job and really proud of all the work he's done. And Don Griffin Jr., who is a local institution, many people know Don, he's going to be joining us as the new deputy mayor. So that's a change in my life, and people will see that's a hardworking job. They help really run the city. So we'll keep an eye on that. And I want to wish goodwill to Mick in his retirement, and a welcome to Don Griffin too.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And for all of you watching or listening, Don't forget, you can email us at news@indianapublicmedia.org with your question. And Mayor Hamilton, we'll see you next month.
Thanks so much, Joe. Be well.